and he said I had to bring it personally and not let it get out of my hands. I owe him favors, and he said if you didn't get it, the whole shaft would fall in. Here it is. 4. Johnny regarded the envelope. It was the paper cover used to package anti-heat shields. The only writing on it was, "Awful Secret." He held it up to the light, darkening now as the storm drew nearer. It had no explosive in it that he could detect. He ripped it open. Ah, it was Kerr's writing, all right. The semi-literate curved hooks and loops might not spell correctly, but they spelled Kerr's idea of a cycloalphabet. He opened it up all the way to read it. It said, "Awful Secret. To you know who. As you know, personal letters are forbidden by company policy, and if I was caught writing and sending one, it would cost me 3 months' pay. Ha ha. But you said before you left, I should write you if a certain thing happened, and give it to a pilot like you know who to bring to you fast. So no names, as names is out security. But it is going to happen, so I am writing you even if the company docks me 3 months' pay. Notice this handwriting is disguised, too. Yesterday, that flunked-out ex-pilot, Knothead Lars, the one who thought he was the world's greatest combat acrobatic pilot, from talking to a party I won't mention because of out security. Security, get it? And broke his silly neck and got promoted to assistant to you-know-who, no names. Come down and asked all the cyclos they got in stir to fix up the breathe gas pumps and ventilators in you-know-who's old office. Well, they won't cooperate, as I knew and you knew they wouldn't. They believe, and I am sure they are drilling straight in, that you-know-who killed old you-know-who by murder. Another one that was murdered afterward had figured it out and told them just before the semi-annual firing, and then he got missing down the shaft, so they believe it. They ain't going to do a thing for you-know-who, or have anything to do with you-know-who's old quarters, because the cyclos are sure you-know-who would blow them up. So anyway, the breathe gas pumps and circulators in that section are all blown to bits, as we both know, and before anybody can go to work in there without a mask, they have to be fixed, but they are broke. So this crazy idiot, the universe's greatest combat pilot that never was in combat and broke his neck, and we couldn't train, come over to see me. And I said, yes, I could fix up the offices of you-know-who, but I would need certain parts, maybe even from other mine sites, because the breathe gas pump is so broke. And he said it was a council order, and he could make sure I got what I needed. So I am drawing up a very fancy repair design that needs lots of parts, and I am delaying as long as I can. They said you-know-who on the council said it was secret and urgent, and they're going to ride me to get it done and pay me extra pay. Ha ha. So I am stalling, and like you said, you better get over here, as I told them I needed assistance. But don't use your name, as anything to do with you-know-who and you-know-who is poison gas in the drift. So there, you know now, and I have about wore my paw out writing this, and my ears out listening to how rush it is, but I will delay and look for unnecessary parts as long as I can for the breathe gas circulator that sure was broke, and is now even more broke. Ha ha. This personal letter could cost me 3 months' pay. Ha ha. So you owe me if I'm caught at it. Ha ha. You know who. Addition. Claw this letter up so it don't cost me 3 months' pay, or my furry neck. No ha ha. Johnny read the letter again, and then, as required, tore it into bits. "When was this given to you?" he asked Stormalong. "Yesterday morning. I had to trace you." Johnny looked out across the lake. The storm was huge now, towering with black turmoil. It was almost upon them. Johnny pushed Stormalong onto the tri-wheeler and started it up. Without another word, he tore across the savannah to the mine site. The growl of thunder sounded, and the first stinging slashes of rain lanced the air. Johnny knew he had to get to America now, at once. 5. "That's a trap," said Robert the Fox. Johnny had returned. He rapidly told them what Kerr had said. He had given orders for the immediate refueling, checkover, and cleaning of Stormalong's plane to be ready within the hour. He had the co-pilot who had come with Stormalong in front of him now, with Angus standing nearby, and he was comparing the two. "Can you trust Kier?" demanded Sir Robert. Johnny didn't answer. He was satisfied Angus could be mistaken for the co-pilot if he darkened his beard, put on a bit of walnut stain, and changed clothes.
"Answer me. I cannot think you've got all your wits."
Robert was so agitated he was pacing back and forth in the underground room Johnny had been using. He was even lapsing into his colloquial Scot dialect. "I must go, now and fast," Johnny shot at them.
"No,"
said Dunnell Dean.
"No," said Robert the Fox.
There was a flurry of translations with his coordinator, and then Colonel Ivan shouted, "Yet!" Johnny had Angus changing clothes with the co-pilot.
"You don't have to go, Angus," he said. "You said yes too hastily."
Angus said, "I'll go. I'll say my prayers and make my will, but I'll go with you, Johnny."
Stormalong was standing there, and Johnny pulled him over to a huge cyclo mirror and stood beside him. Tropic sun had tanned Johnny lately. Their skin tone difference was not so great now. Stormalong's beard was a little darker. Some walnut stain would fix that. There was the new facial scar, well healed now, that Johnny had gotten. Nothing could be done about that, and he hoped people would think Stormalong had had an accident. Yes, wait. He could put a bandage on it. Ah, the square cut of the bottom of the beard. That was what was making the difference. He reached for the toolkit Angus always carried, got out some sharp wire snips, and began to make his beard exactly the same as Stormalong's. That done, he changed clothes with him. Now a little walnut stain in the beard. Good. He looked at himself in the mirror. Ah, yes, the piece of bandage. He got that and put it on. Now? Good. He could pass for Stormalong. The huge old-fashioned goggles, white scarf, and leather flying coat. Yes, they did it. Unless he was looked at too closely, or their slight difference in accent was heard. He made Stormalong talk, then he talked. No Scott Burr in Stormalong's accent. Scott University? A little soft in pronunciation? He tried it. Yes, he could also sound like Stormalong. The others were very agitated. The big Russian was cracking the knuckles of his huge hands. Biddy McLeod was peering into the room. He came forward, his eyes bright with pleading. "No," said Johnny. "Pride or no pride, this mission had death in it. You cannot come with me." Then he softened. "Take good care of Colonel Ivan." Biddy swallowed and backed up. Angus had finished and run out. The clang of cartridges being changed and the whir of a drill sounded from the hangar where they were readying the plane. Johnny beckoned to Colonel Ivan. He and his coordinator came forward. "Get the American underground base closed, Colonel. Every door, so no one can enter but us. Close it so hard they'll never get into it. Do the same thing with the tactical and nuclear weapons area 30 miles to the north. Seal it. Secure every assault rifle not in use by Scots. Have you got it?" The colonel had a group there now. Yes, he got it. Johnny beckoned to Dunnell Dean and Sir Robert, and they kept pace with him as he went toward their commissary. Johnny, in terse, brief statements, told them exactly what to do to carry on if he were killed. They were very sober, worried for him. The hairbreadth daring of his plan left an awful lot of room for slip-ups. But they got it. They said they would carry on. "And Dunnell Dean," concluded Johnny, "I want you over at the Academy in America in about 24 hours, coming in from Scotland to take over the pilot training duties of Stormalong, who by then, with luck, will be on other assignment." For once, Dunnell Dean just nodded assent. The old woman who had come down from the mountains of the Moon Tribe, with her whole family, to run their commissary, must have heard rumors in the wind. She had a food package gathered up for two, some gourds full of sweet water, and a big sandwich of roasted African buffalo meat and millet bread. And she stood right there in front of Johnny until he began eating it.
Sir Robert picked up the food package and Dunnell Dean the gourds, and they walked past the old cyclo operations office. There was hammering and drill whirring still coming from the plane area, where Angus was making sure it was all operational. Johnny picked up a few yards of radio printer paper and glanced at current traffic, looking for any unusual weather in the pilot crosstalk.
Well, well. One, two, yes, two mentions of the craft that got as big as the sky.
Story similar to the one Stormalong had told him. The small gray man mentioned in both. India, South America.
The small gray man gets around, murmured Johnny.
Dunnell Dean and Sir Robert craned around to the printout to see what he was talking about.
Stormalong will tell you, said Johnny.
Earth certainly was of interest to some other civilization in space. But the small gray man didn't seem hostile, at least not yet.
Keep this or any other base you go to defended on a 24-hour basis, said Johnny.
The whirring and hammering had stopped, and they went to the plane. It was being dollied to just inside the open hangar door. Stormalong was standing there with his co-pilot.
You stay here, said Johnny. Both of you.
You, he jabbed a finger into Stormalong's chest, be me. Go on that same route every day in my clothes and throw rocks. And you, he pointed a finger at the co-pilot, a Scot they called Darth, be Angus.
I'm no good at other things bonny Angus kens, wailed the co-pilot.
You do them, said Johnny. A Russian came running in from outside and told them it was all clear, no drones coming. Not on screens or eyeball. His new English had a colloquial Scotch accent. Johnny and Angus got in the plane. Sir Robert and Dunnell Dean threw the food and water in. Then they both stood there looking up at Johnny. They were trying to think of something to say, but both of them were unable to talk. Biddy stood back. He waved a timid hand. Johnny shut the plane door. Angus gave him a thumbs up. Johnny signaled the dolly crew to shove them out and pushed the heavy starter buttons with his fists. He looked back. The crews and people in the hangar door weren't waving. Johnny's fingers shoved into the console buttons. Stormalong watched breathlessly in the door. He had known Johnny was a flyer unequaled, but he had never seen a battle plane vault upward so fast and sharply and rush into hypersonic so quickly. The bottom of the broken sound barrier rocketed back at them as it echoed against the African peaks. Or was that the boom of the storm that engulfed the speeding ship? A roll of thunder and a lightning flash. The group in the hangar door still stood there, looking at the place where the ship had vanished into the cloud-boiling sky. There Johnny was on his way to America fast. They didn't like it. Not any part of it.